Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Delighted to have you here for the great big Monday show. You may not be aware of this, but there's an election tomorrow, and everyone is so fond, I notice on TV, of saying elections have consequences, and that's like the new catchphrase, and they certainly do have consequences, and it's a big one tomorrow, and if you've not prayed and fasted for this republic as it goes again to the polls, you still have time. Prayer and fasting also have consequences, and we can know that by faith. This year, healthcare and immigration seem to be the big issues, but one of the most contested issues of our time is religious freedom. Once a relatively peaceful topic in America, religious freedom, particularly as the sexual revolution has advanced, is a more and more contested area. You know, should nuns have to pay for birth control? Should Catholic hospitals have to perform abortions? And where is the line where religious freedom has to yield to non-discrimination? If you have questions about religious freedom, about the Catholic perspective on religious freedom in particular, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We spend this hour devoted to talking about religious freedom. Our guest is Father Sebastian Walsh. Father Walsh is a Norbertine canon of the Abbey of St. Michael in the Diocese of Orange, California, where he is a professor of philosophy for their seminary program. He's a graduate of Thomas Aquinas College here in California, the Catholic University of America, and the Pontifical University of St. Thomas in Rome, which is called the Angelicum. And Father Sebastian Walsh has a doctorate in philosophy from there. Father Walsh, thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Cy. Good to be here.
So you were mentioning to me just before we went on the air that you've been in Massachusetts because you're a graduate of Thomas Aquinas College.
That's right.
All of us out here on the West Coast are I think there's a general amazement at the quality of students that are being turned out by Thomas Aquinas College.
Yeah, it's a real blessing. It's an excellent education, that's for sure.
And so you were in Massachusetts on their behalf?
Yeah, so thanks be to God. The college received the gift of a campus with a number of buildings and so forth on about 100-acre property that had been owned by a group called the Moody Center after a famous Protestant preacher from the late 19th century, Dwight Moody. And that property was being held. It was no longer being used. It had originally been used as a school. And it was donated to Thomas Aquinas College. And with that donation, together with the approval of the Massachusetts Board of Education, they're planning on opening up an East Coast branch of Thomas Aquinas College in Massachusetts, Northfield, Massachusetts. So I was there to offer a mass and to give a little talk together with them. There were others who spoke, the president and then the associate dean who will be the dean on campus there, Tom Kaiser, and the president, of course, of Thomas Aquinas College, Michael McLean, spoke. And it was a very good, wonderful event. There was at least 150, maybe 200 people that came for that.
We're hoping
that a lot of students will look into that and that some will apply and will attend. So.
Yeah, it's part of a general movement, I think, in Catholic education, higher education, towards being more fully and excitedly and flammably Catholic. That's happening, I think, both in newer schools like Thomas Aquinas College and in the older Catholic universities and colleges, either rediscovering or just letting go of their Catholic identity. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And really what's important, and this is something I think Thomas Aquinas College does really well, is understanding exactly what Catholic education means. I think a lot of Catholic universities lost their way. They thought basically what we mean by Catholic education is a secular education with some religion classes. And it doesn't work that way. That's not what Catholic education is. It's not a secular cake with Catholic icing. It's a different cake. It's a better cake, as I put it. That's a metaphor I like to use.
I really ask. Go ahead. Yep.
And that means that all the courses are ultimately integrated and unified in truth, you know, serving sacred theology. So.
Indeed. Congratulations to your alma mater embarking on this new endeavor. We can all pray that it's successful. We need a lot of successes in Catholic higher education, and more we are having those. And a lot of good, faithful people in the older Catholic institutions doing their work to revitalize that Catholic identity, and lots of good people in the new Catholic colleges. We got one here in San Diego, too. John Paul the Great.
John Paul the Great,
yeah,
right?
Catholic University. They're giving it a try, yeah. and they're pretty impressive as well. All right, so religious freedom. What is it, anyways? Like, what do we mean when we're talking about religious freedom, and why do we give it such importance?
Sure. In the United States, of course, freedom, we value freedom very highly. It's important, and maybe even in modern consciousness, especially since the French Revolution and maybe before, there's been a very strong emphasis on freedom. Huh? Freedom itself, it's important. It's an ability. It's a power, but it's not in and of itself an absolute good. That's something we'll talk about later. But it's an ability. It's an ability to act in such a way as to bring about fulfillment, happiness, and we would say in a more philosophical vocabulary, it's the ability to act in a way that perfects your nature, okay, makes you more truly what you are as a human person, a human being. So it's not just being without restrictions, right? Freedom, you know, if you go out and you say, well, I get to go torture a little baby or I go to commit adultery, those aren't freedoms. They're certainly not freedoms that you value, or they're not freedoms that are good for you or bring about your happiness. Indeed, those freedoms are such as are necessary to bring about human perfection. So, when that happens, it's important that we understand religious freedom is a freedom to act in such a way that perfects us according to the highest aspect of our nature, namely the ability to know, to love, and to serve God. Of all the different things that perfect our nature, for example, we're animals, and so just to be animals, we need to be able to be free to move around freely so we're not in prison. And then we're also rational animals, and as human beings, we have the freedom to do things like just to interact socially with other human persons, to get an education, to marry, to have a family, those sort of freedoms. But what's highest in man, what's most perfective of man, is that spiritual component by which we are united to God, our greatest good. And therefore, of all freedoms, religious freedom is the supreme freedom. Among all freedoms. Does that make sense?
It does, yes. Okay, so now I have to say that doesn't sound like the way a lot of Americans would talk about it. You know what I mean? That religious freedom is a kind of like liberty we have to do whatever you want in that regard, that it's not ordered towards our perfection.
Yeah. Yeah, the truth of the matter is that if anything's going to be really and legitimately a freedom, if we're talking about a good freedom here, we're not talking about a freedom for license or, you know, the distinction, we would use the word license if we're talking about a freedom, in quotes, which is actually just the ability to go around harming other people and ourselves, huh? That's license. But if you're talking about freedom in the sense that I'm defining it here, that is the ability to act in such a way that really is bringing about your happiness, your fulfillment, your perfection, then you have to understand religious freedom in that same way. And therefore, you have to see religious freedom as ultimately ordered to finding that human happiness that can only be found in a relationship with God and union with the Supreme Being. And so that's what religious freedom means in a Catholic context, what a Catholic thinks of when they think of religious freedom is that. Now, it's true today, I think many people just say, well, what you mean by religious freedom is the arbitrary ability to just sort of randomly say, I'm this religion and this allows me to do certain things that other people can't do because I'm this religion. And it's precisely that false view of religious freedom that I think has resulted in a kind of a negative backlash in our society where people say, well, you know, you just use religious freedom as a mask for discrimination, for example.
Yeah.
When in fact it's not. It's not a mask for discrimination at all. It really does have an objective foundation in what it means to be human and not just in the arbitrary whims of someone's appetite.
Father Sebastian Walsh is our guest. We're discussing religious freedom this hour. If you have questions about religious freedom, or if you maybe from a non-Catholic or a non-religious perspective would like to challenge our view of religious freedom, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Your questions, whether you're Catholic or not, are welcome on the question of religious freedom. I want to remind you before we take our break, it's still on the big store-wide fall sale at shop.catholic.com. Save 20% off hundreds of items in our online store, including books, DVDs, CDs, MP3s, ebooks, and a whole bunch of other things. Visit shop.catholic.com, put in the promo code CALIVE18 at checkout, and you save.
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Trump administration rolls back the Health and Human Services contraceptive mandate.
U.S. bishops calling for the total elimination of nuclear weapons.
Pope Francis offers prayers for the victims of the California wildfires.
The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a bill banning abortions after 20 weeks.
And Pope Francis says the death penalty is contrary to the gospel.
Your link to news headlines Catholics count on at the top of the hour. Weekdays on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Religious freedom is our topic for the hour. We do have that great big election tomorrow. People are putting a great deal of importance on the election. I guess they're all really important, but they're not always quite so contested on very basic issues. So that gives them an added feeling of importance. And we do hope that you will say a prayer for this country as people begin to go to the polls for tomorrow. Our guest this hour is Father Sebastian Walsh, and we're talking about an issue that is, in fact, quite contested in our republic these days and actually all over the world. This is a contested topic, the topic of religious freedom. We're talking about what it is, why it's important. And Father Walsh, I'd also like to ask you, what can you give us a sense of the limits? Because there –
yeah.
I guess one of the things that you can't say, well, I don't know, there's some emergency and the – because we have them here in California all the time. Say a fire is coming through, a wildfire is coming through.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not leaving I'm not following the directions of the first responders because my religious freedom, my religious practice is to, whatever.
Yeah.
It seems like there's certain basic societal things you have to do to make society work, and you can't just get out of those by claiming religious freedom.
Yeah, I think everyone can see that religious freedom, again, like I said, freedom isn't an absolute good. It has goodness to the extent that it's an ability that's ordained to some truth and some reality. And for example, let's say you had a person who claimed to be a Satanist and that it was his religious right to sacrifice children or something, right?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Very obvious that people would say, okay, that's not okay for religious freedom. There are obvious limits. And one of those obvious limits is what we refer to in the Catholic tradition as the natural law. In other words, the moral behavior that can be known what's good and bad about human actions just from reason alone without revelation, right? So you can know without revelation. You don't need to be a particular religion to know that it's wrong to sacrifice children, right? This is not a difficult thing. Adultery, you can see that that's wrong without any special revelation, right? Polygamy, you can see that's wrong without some special revelation, and so forth. There are many things. And this is the so-called natural law. And so certainly, if a religion claimed to violate the natural law, then the society would certainly have the right to do what it could to impede that. So that's one limit that society would look at and say, okay, you can't have that as a religious freedom, because in fact it violates the natural law, and God is the author of both nature and revelation. So the same God wouldn't violate his own law, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that as a limit on religious freedom, to the extent that what it's really saying is, I've got a false religion there if it's violating the natural law. So there's one limit there. There's another limit that isn't often thought of, and especially kind of in the post-Vatican II church, people don't think that often about this. But it's this, that there's no such thing as a right to error or a right to false worship. Religious indifferentism is not the same thing as religious freedom, right? When we say we have religious freedom, what we mean is that each person has the freedom to seek to know and to love God as he is, as he really is, not as he wants to construct him or make him up or in some, you know, as a way that he isn't. Each of us has the right and also the duty and obligation to seek out God as he has truly revealed himself. And therefore, religious freedom doesn't mean the right to false worship. It doesn't mean the right to pursue error. It doesn't mean a kind of an unbridled right that says that all religions are equal or something like that. So it's important to see that religious freedom isn't just this absolute right, and anyone who claims whatever religion is okay. It really does have to have an objective standard in truth and in reality. Part of that can be known by reason alone, and that's the natural law part. And then other parts can be known in some way through revelation. You can say, well, look, this revelation has evidence of coming from God, but that revelation doesn't, you know. So that's another element of religious freedom. And in today's society, where the state is practically secular, that's not really an issue. It wouldn't be much of an issue in the modern society, precisely because the state is, you know, the state isn't in any way making any judgments about revelation or anything like that. So practically speaking, the limits in a modern secular society would have to do more with the natural law. But for Catholics, we don't think that religious freedom is an absolute right to pursue error and to worship falsely or something. Now, that being said, even if there were, let's say that, you know, you were living in a Catholic confessional state in the Middle Ages, you still couldn't be compelled to be baptized, or you couldn't be compelled to go to communion or to worship. You know, the Catholic Church has always recognized that you can't be a Catholic and practice the Catholic faith without free consent. And so there is a sense in which religious freedom, even if you were in a confessional state where you had the true religion, right, if there was a religion that you could know was true, you still have a certain freedom with regard to the worship that you exercise towards God, because there's no such thing as worshiping God without your own consent, you know. So that's important in order. Otherwise, you might misinterpret the Church's understanding of religious freedom as just religious indifferentism.
Right. Okay, I see. Fair enough. But it does strike me that the American idea of religious freedom is mm-hmm. kind of an indifferentist idea. It is that they're all equal before the state, all these religions.
And that's a point that I was making with regard to when you live in a secular state where there's there's no view about religion, and revelation doesn't inform in any way the constitution of the state. At that point, then the state's not making any judgments one way or the other. People have political authority and political power, aren't in any position to make a judgment about the truths of revelation, for example. So practically speaking, they would be using just the natural law as a measure. But that's different. Saying what the secular state is sort of bound to from its own principles is different than saying, well, what a Catholic has to hold from Catholic principles. You could put it more abstractly this way. You could just say, look, religious freedom is a freedom for the true religion, whatever religion's true. As Catholics, of course, you believe that the Catholic faith is true. And therefore, for a Catholic, you say, well, our religious freedom is really a freedom in order to be able to worship God as he has revealed himself and how he wants to be worshiped. And everyone would agree, at least to the more general principle, I think, that you have a right to worship God as he truly is, but you don't have a right absolutely to error or right to false worship, that would be saying you have a right to do something wrong. And that doesn't make much sense, I think. But as you say, from the standpoint of, you know, our modern secular state, that's not a judgment that the state would make. That would be something that's, you know, that's just from the matter of Catholics and their conscience to be able to say, well, no, I don't have I'm not claiming by saying that there's a right to religious freedom. I'm not saying that all religions are equal. I think that would be false and disingenuous for not only a Catholic, but anyone who adhered to their religious beliefs.
We're talking religious freedom with Father Sebastian Walsh, a Norbertine priest and professor of philosophy. Our number, 888-318-7884. If you prefer the spelled version, it's 888-31-TRUTH. Maybe particularly you might have questions about how these general themes that we're outlining might apply in particular cases. I know I certainly do have questions in that regard. Your calls are welcome, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Okay, so some of the things that I named at the beginning, I want to ask you about them to maybe give some practical guidance on how we know.
Sure.
I think I get the you know, one of the questions I pointed to was, should Catholic hospitals be permitted to refuse to perform abortions?
Yes.
And that strikes me, now that I've heard what you have to say about religious freedom, as a natural law thing.
That's right. The reason why in front of the state of whatever, California or whatever state that you're in, the reason why we would claim that is because, look, even the natural law tells you that you're not supposed to destroy your own offspring or your children. Don't kill the innocent, you know?
Yeah.
Don't destroy your offspring. And from a natural law perspective, the church could claim exemption there on that front and just say, well, no, this is contrary to the natural law. Now, that brings up an interesting question, however. Grace is necessary even for nature to achieve what's possible for it.
Yeah.
Without grace, fallen nature falls below nature. And so the principles of the natural law, once a state ceases to be informed by the principles of revelation and the grace that comes with the sacraments, then the tendency is for secular states to fall beneath the natural law, and that's what we're finding today, that even the natural law is no longer supported by most secular states. Things that are obviously wrong, like killing innocent children, destroying your offspring,
right,
homosexual interactions, you know, controlling and defining marriage as if it were a creation of the state, redefining male and female and defining male and female according to the state rather than and social conventions rather than to nature.
Yeah.
Things that are obviously wrong are things that now the state has fallen away from because of the effects of original sin. And so what ends up happening is necessarily the secular state necessarily comes at odds with the church and with any authentic revelation, as it turns out. So the natural law, while it would be nice if you could practically use that, what happens is very often in secular states is they only adhere to the natural law for a short time after they cease to be informed by Christian principles.
And then it falls away.
Society.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
As we de-Christianize our culture, there's less and less interest in human nature as a fact and more as an idea that we can do what we want with human beings, including ourselves.
Nevertheless, you can make an argument without referring to revelation at all, defending the church's principle. You know, you can defend the church's teaching against contraception, against abortion, against same-sex unions. You can defend all those things without ever once referring to revelation. And certainly Catholics should do that, and people from any faith or religion should, in principle, be able to have access to these same arguments.
Well, let me throw you out something that I think we're hearing more and more of, not necessarily in the United States, but around the world. But it'll come, I think, to the United States. And it's a question for you as a priest. Why should the state, which is supposed to be secular, mm-hmm. respect your protecting of secrets that are entrusted to you in the confessional? Shouldn't you be required to report what you hear in the confessional? What I'm saying is, if the state is going to be neutral in matters of religion, then you should be compelled to testify just like anyone else should be compelled to testify.
That's a great question. So let me answer that just purely on the basis of just a secular argument, without even an appeal to revelation. The truth of the matter is, let's say that I agree that there are certain sins that I'm going to reveal to the state once I hear them in confession. What will be the net effect of that on the penitent, the people who come to confession?
They stop confessing.
As soon as they hear that that's what happens, they're going to stop confessing.
Right.
So what good will come to the state?
Oh, you know what, Father? I'm going to have to ask you to hold the continue. We'll finish that on the other side, if that's all right with you.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, we're talking with Father Sebastian Walsh about religious freedom, among the hot topics in our culture today as we approach a kind of moment of decision tomorrow in the country. We get those every 2 years around here in America. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live and your questions for Father Walsh right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
What do the Pharisees, pagan emperors, the Nazis, and the Quran all have in common? All were enemies of the faith, who admitted crucial facts that undermined their own position. In his new book, Hostile Witnesses, How the Historic Enemies of the Church Prove Christianity, author Gary Machuda looks at dozens of Christianity's most notorious foes, from biblical times through the 20th century, and draws from their words and deeds surprising testimony to gospel truths. Rich in research and written with clarity and force, Hostile Witnesses is a unique contribution to Catholic apologetics, one that speaks with special urgency to a modern world in which the faith is once again under attack. If you love apologetics, you need to order your copy of Hostile Witnesses today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Father Sebastian Walsh, our guest. We're talking religious freedom. The Catholic understanding of religious freedom is actually very, very well developed and ancient, with ancient roots. I suppose extending at least as far back as the Lord saying, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Even the way that our Lord presents the gospel itself as something that has to be chosen, that you've got to make this decision.
In the Maccabees, it's very clear that there's a doctrine of religious freedom there. You have the state going in trying to impose a false worship or false religion, and the Jewish people resisted that, right?
Right.
In favor of the true religion. So there was a notion of religious freedom even in the Old Testament.
And that's where we got Hanukkah, too.
right.
Okay, so we were talking about confession, however, and callers, I will get to you momentarily. Please just hang on. I just want to finish, let Father finish this question that I had for him. So here we are in a secular state, and increasingly the argument is being made, I know in Australia in particular, but in other secular states, that priests should have no seal of the confessional, that you should be obligated to alert authorities to the crimes that you hear about. You should have to testify in court about what you hear in confessions. And you had begun your answer, but I want to let you finish, Father.
Yes, absolutely. So let's take that as a hypothetical. And again, I'm going to answer purely on secular principles. let's take it as a hypothetical that the church says, okay, fine, with certain crimes, we're going to report the people who come to confession. So what's going to happen with regard to the people who come to confession? Do you think that people will come to confession and confess crimes for which they know they'll be reported? No.
No, of course
not. So not a single person is going to be caught. No more criminals are going to be caught or stopped or anything like that. Or if that does happen, only a few of them, and those few would probably be so dumb that they'd be caught some other way. Because can you imagine just going to just like, you know, like go report yourself, you know? So that's not going to help anything, number one. And then look at the flip side. Since those people aren't going to go to confession, no one's going to touch them at their heart, in their soul. And so there won't be any conversions either. And so those same people who aren't going to confession, none of them are going to be reformed either, and then they'll be more likely to go out and continue committing that crime. But if you have the Catholic confession where you have the seal, then it's true that some of those people who come and confess, it's true that some of them will relapse and won't reform their lives. But it's also true, and I know this from experience, that many of them will. And so while you might not catch the criminals through confession, you'll be able to stop many crimes through confession. So from the state's perspective, it's better for them to allow the confessional seal because it provides for the possibility of an interior reformation of someone's life that the state can't provide for. So even if you just had a purely secular argument and you didn't believe the truth of the Catholic faith, you could at least see the fact that you're not going to do any good by violating the seal of confessional, and you might do quite a bit of good by permitting that seal to continue.
Now, that's an argument that you make to the secular state.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's really a secular argument. Is there a deeper theological argument about why that seal must be respected by the state?
Absolutely. And that is, again, with regard to the inviolable relationship between God and man. The state, if it's not a totalitarian state, respects the fact that it is not the most powerful thing in the universe. The state recognizes that it has a temporal goal and a temporal aim, and it doesn't have absolute authority over every aspect of a human person's life. And among the aspects that the state does not have control over is a personal relationship which exists between God and the soul. And so the state should have the humility to say, I'm not a totalitarian state. I'm not in control. I am not God. But rather, I have a limited temporal aim to fulfill, and that is obviously the protection of my citizens, the promotion of temporal goods, you know, wealth and conditions for human happiness and flourishing in this life. Those are all legitimate goods the state aims at. But once the state claims that it is God, it takes the place of God, then no kind of travesty, no kind of abuse is avoidable at that point. And that's what happened, for example, in communist countries and other states that are totalitarian.
But you can't – I don't think in the modern world we can imagine a state that accrues so much power to itself that it starts doing things like redefining marriage or that kind of thing. That's not
– Or male and female.
Yeah, it's not possible that states would over – that I can't imagine it, Father.
Maybe demanding that people follow a certain, you know, new state made-up religion or anything like that. No, I don't know if you know this, but in communist Russia, they actually mandated communist mathematics. Did you know that?
No, I did not. That must be pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was basically they basically told people they had to, in the sciences and mathematics, they had to follow principles that would support, you know, the principles of communism and so forth. So
yeah.
You know, there's nothing that will be left untouched by a totalitarian state. And that's what we need to be afraid of, right? So
right.
One of the reasons we have religious freedom is freedom from the state, not just freedom for God, but freedom from the state. And the First Amendment, the way it's written, it seems like only half of it is paid attention to now. It says, right, the federal government shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor restricting the free exercise thereof. And it seems like only the first half of that is observed in any way, and the second half is completely ignored today.
So. Yeah, all right, indeed. Well, I promised callers I would get to them. Our number, 888-318-7884. If you have a question for Father Sebastian Walsh about religious freedom, 888-318-7884. Ben in Cincinnati, listening on Sacred Heart Radio, you are up first. Your question for Father Sebastian Walsh.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Ben.
I guess what my question is, the way you define religious freedom, is there a meaningful difference between what you're calling religious freedom and just saying Catholicism is true and that's what we should practice? So, how do you understand
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. I tried to refer to that when I mentioned, even if you had a confessional state, and by what I mean by a confessional state is a state that actually has an official religion. Even if you had like the perfect Catholic confessional state, okay, you still couldn't force someone to be baptized. You couldn't force someone to receive communion or be confirmed or to practice the Catholic religion. That's also part of religious freedom, the fact that God does not want to be worshipped by force. Do you understand that? So from that perspective, there's a difference between just saying, well, the Catholic religion is true and you have religious freedom. Absolutely, no one can be compelled to worship in a way that they think is a false religion or contrary to their conscience. Now, there's also another question, and that is, what about the practices that belong to another religion other than the Catholic faith? Would something like that be permitted? Well, first of all, it's true that other religions have part of the truth, that to the extent they have part of the truth, for example, if you belong to a Protestant religion or something like that, and you had baptism, and it was a valid baptism, right, then to be baptized, you know, in the Protestant religion, for example, would be something that you could permit, precisely because it's a valid baptism and it's got part of the truth there. And other forms of religious worship which weren't contrary to the natural law or contrary to clear revelation would still be something that even in a Catholic confessional state would be permissible. So I don't want you to think that, okay, religious freedom means just the freedom to worship in the Catholic faith and in no other way to seek God outside of an actual Catholic church. Does that answer your question or no, or is that still too vague for you?
So I don't know why I feel a little bit, it does answer my question, but I feel a little bit uncomfortable with it, and I'm not quite sure why. It seems like, I mean, maybe I'm just attached to the kind of indifferentism. Maybe my question is your definition of religious freedom, does it necessarily imply a confessional state? Or is it actually compatible with the kind of pluralist society?
Yeah. There's a difference between the theory and the application of the theory. And when you talk about the application of the theory, as I mentioned before, when you have a secular state, when you don't have the Constitution actually confessing the truths, for example, the Catholic religion, the majority of the populace, the vast majority of the populace aren't practicing Catholics or something. When you've got a secular state like you have in the United States, practically speaking, the way in which religious freedom would be embodied would be largely in the guarantees that the state wouldn't interfere with the free exercise of the practice of your religion. And by the way, that's more broad than just freedom of worship. You know, it happened in the last administration that they kept on, instead of referring to freedom of religion, they talked about freedom of worship. And freedom of worship basically means you can go inside your church and pray the way you want quietly, but you can't exercise your religion in the public domain in any way. You can't, you know, evangelize, for example. You can't, you know, provide adoption services or marriage or the different things that happen publicly. And certainly, the freedom of religion in a secular state must be broader than merely freedom of worship. And And since that secular state doesn't have a Catholic constitution, nor is it composed of persons that are predominantly Catholic and accept the Catholic faith, then the way in which you would apply those Catholic principles in a secular state would obviously be, you don't demand that, you know, well, okay, the state now has to accept these Catholic principles. That's the, it's obviously not going to happen. And so what you do demand from the state is following the natural law and also permitting authentic expression of religion, not only in worship and in private worship places, but also the exercise of legitimate religion that doesn't contradict the natural law. So it, obviously the application of that teaching would be different in a secular state like we have in the United States today. Does that answer your question, or is it?
Yeah, it does. I don't want to take up too much time. I'll just say the last point, though, you said obviously not going to happen, but of course in a democracy, I don't think it's obvious that that's not the case now, but it's not obvious that it's not something we shouldn't work for. And so the question is, ought we really to be working for a confessional state, or ought we to be maintaining the kind of thing that we have now?
I'll answer the question more kind of universally and then in the particular. We ought to be working for a state in which the true God is worshipped the way he ought to be worshipped. That is really true. We shouldn't be looking for a state where we believe all religions are equal, because that's not true, and we believe all gods are equal. It's not true. We should be working for a state in which the true God is worshipped in the true way, the proper way. Now, if you're a Catholic, then that obviously means that you would be working for a state in which the Catholic faith was recognized and was adopted. But you're not going to be able to do that without convincing people freely that the Catholic faith is true. So obviously the way you would go about it in a secular state where there wasn't a majority of Catholics is precisely through evangelization, through living of a Christian life. When you think about the ancient Roman society, only one of seven of the ancient Romans at the time of Constantine were actually Christian, practicing Christians. They were all Catholic, by the way. But it was through their generous life and their very wonderful moral life and the forcefulness of their teaching and the miracles that were performed and so forth that the whole of the state was essentially converted. And that would be the ideal. But again, that has to be done in the legitimate way through evangelization, not through political force. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Thank you, Ben.
It has to be something that the people freely accepted rather than felt that was imposed on them.
Appreciate that call and that very enlightening conversation. So, Father, we're just trying to get one in seven Americans to be a fully on fire Catholic, and then we're good. Is that what you're saying?
That would do it.
That would
believe me. That would do it.
I imagine it would.
One in seven Americans were fully on fire. It would work.
Fair enough. Before we go to the break, let me tell you this: Catholic Answers Magazine is a perfect gift for you, your friends, your family, your priests, your students. Give it to seminarians, just about anyone you know. You sign up at CatholicAnswersMagazine.com, and the first issue of 2019 will be the very special ABCs of Apologetics. That's 26 articles on Catholic topics from A to Z. I still don't know what Z is. I thought maybe Zoroastrianism. No, it wasn't that. Zechariah? No, not Zechariah. So I still am anxious for the issue to come out and I can find out what Z is. Go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up. You won't be sorry you did.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God. Yeah, I love the show, but I just wanted to call to encourage that previous caller who called about the Latin Mass and just encourage him to keep giving it a try and especially try to meet some folks outdoors and let his wife meet some people, and that does make that experience so much better. And thank you for your historical background, and it was a good interpretation of the history.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What do I got to do to be saved? That's what Carlo Broussard will be in here discussing next hour. The Bible Blueprint for Your Salvation with Carlo Broussard, our second hour. This hour, we're talking with Father Sebastian Walsh, Norbertine priest and philosopher, and we're talking about religious freedom. 888-318-7884 is the number if you have a question about religious freedom for Father Walsh. 888-318-7884. We go now to Jeffrey in Connecticut, watching on Facebook Live. Jeffrey, thanks for watching on Facebook Live. Your question for Father Sebastian Walsh.
Hi, Father Walsh. I had a question regarding how to be a good American and a patriot, and how to be a faithful Catholic related to the heresy of Americanism under the thought pattern of people like Pope Leo XIII and others.
Yeah,
I wanted some clarification of what that heresy entails and how we can, as faithful Catholics, be better patriots when voting.
Yeah, that's very good. So Leo XIII, as you mentioned, he spoke about a heresy that he entitled or named Americanism. So that's probably news to most Americans. But Americanism didn't consist in just simply adhering to the Constitution of the United States. And I want to make sure that you understand that distinction. Leo XIII himself wrote to the American bishops, and he actually praised the wisdom and justice of the laws of the United States. So it wasn't a condemnation of our Constitution. Do you understand that at first? It's just, and so it's quite possible to be a good American and to be a good Catholic simultaneously. Okay, that's really important to see. And as far as all the details of what Leo XIII condemned in Americanism, I'm not prepared to go into all the details of that particular thing. First of all, I haven't read that document in a few years. But it did have to do with things like religious indifferentism, the idea that all religions are equal and that separation of church and state is the ideal, those sort of things. None of those is the same thing as saying that, practically speaking, in the concrete circumstances in which we live in the United States, where the majority, the vast majority of the citizens are not Catholic, clearly you're not going to have some sort of Catholic confessional state here. And therefore, the idea of freedom of religion as reflected in the First Amendment in the United States, I don't think that's something Leo XIII would have objected to at all in the concrete circumstances. He would have objected to someone saying the ideal condition for a state is for the state to be separate, church and state to be completely separate. And the reason why Leo would have objected to that is because he understood that the relation between church and state was like the relation of a soul to its body. And that would be like saying the ideal state for a person is to have his soul separated from his body or something like that. It's one thing to say concretely, here's what you permit. It's another thing to say this is the ideal. And I think that's what Leo XIII was condemning when he talked about Americanism, among other things. So that's the first thing. Another thing is to recognize this, that as an American, you can work for and advance and promote the Catholic faith. You have the freedom to do that, you know, in the public sphere. And that's something we do as good and faithful Catholics. We have the ability to publicly speak about the faith, to evangelize. We have the ability to do works of charity in keeping with the Catholic faith. And all those are things you can do as a good Catholic and are in no way opposed to being a good American. I always think of St. Thomas More's line to King Henry VIII, who would end up denying the Catholic faith, He said, "I die the king's good servant, but God's first." And that should be the attitude of every Catholic, that we should faithfully follow our Constitution. And I think our Constitution can be followed faithfully without departing from the Catholic faith.
Okay, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Father.
You're welcome, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Certainly we have in the history of the United States a lot of accusation from outside the Catholic Church that we Catholics can't be good Americans because of our loyalty to the Pope or to the Vatican or to to something that's outside the borders of this country. I think a good many Catholics, we have a confused response to that sometimes. Sometimes we over-accommodate to the culture as a way of showing that we belong. Other times we are not critical enough of the culture.
No, that's right. I do think that's right. So, again, you know, I remember Archbishop Chaput, he wrote a book, I think it was called Render Unto Caesar, if I'm not mistaken. And he said something very interesting. He said, we're told today by the modern media that we're not to bring our religious beliefs to the ballot box. And then he said, well, a country in which each person is free to, regardless of his beliefs, to vote as he wills, has a name. It's called democracy.
That's a very good point. Yes, exactly.
You know, it's right. For whatever reason, if you're an atheist or if you're anti-religious, you're allowed to bring those beliefs to the ballot box. But as long as you're a Catholic,
right,
then supposedly you're undemocratic. No, everyone has a right to vote as they please in accordance with their conscience and their religious beliefs. That's what we believe in, a democracy. So,
Alan in Springfield, Missouri, I want to get you on real quick here, Alan, make sure we get your question in. What your question for Father Walsh, please?
Yeah, I hope you all can hear me.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, a while back in Arkansas, there was some sort of Satanist statue of some sort. Mm-hmm. I think it's taken down now, but I'm just wondering, like, if that happens again, maybe it happens in my state of Missouri, what's the best way to, like, tell people about how it's wrong of that statue without sounding like a big bully trying to push knock the statue over? What's the best way to evangelize, I guess, still?
Oh. Right. How do we respond to those kind of provocations, Father?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things you would do is that you would just simply educate yourself and inform yourself about what's involved in Satanism. And you would explain to people, this is what this statue stands for and endorses, and this is the beliefs of that religious sect, if you want to call it religious at all, and point out that they're clearly against the natural law, clearly against what you can know from reason, even without any revelation. And and once you see that they stand for things that are intrinsically evil, and you don't need to be from any particular faith tradition or faith confession in order to see that, then I think people are easily convinced, like, oh, we don't need public representations or supports or endorsements of that kind of evil in the world. So I think Satanism and witchcraft and whatever else, because of the neo-pagans that are around, it's getting some traction in the modern world. But you can appeal the natural law to without any reference to the Catholic faith or Christian faith to show the evil in that.
There's also a certain group of atheists who call themselves Satanists, and their point being that they want to challenge Christians who want to put up Christian imagery by putting up satanic imagery, even though they claim not to believe in Satan, but to show that all this religious imagery should just be taken down.
Yeah, well, that's hypocrisy. I mean, they don't even believe it, so why would you even take them seriously? They're obviously just trying to be hypocritical. You know, I would only deal with people who actually believed in what they were doing. So if they, by their own admission, tell you they don't believe in the things they're doing, then you've got no problem with it. You don't have any attachment to it either. You're just trying to attack other people for their legitimate religious beliefs. And not only is that hypocritical on your part, but it's certainly a lack of tolerance on your part. And that kind of lack of tolerance is certainly not in keeping with the principles of our country.
What are you talking about? Their side never lacks tolerance. It's only our side that's intolerant. You didn't know that, Father?
Yeah, well, I had the sense that people think that sometimes. But
Father, may we have your blessing before we go?
Penitent intercessionem Beata Maria Virginis et omnem sanctorum, benedicite me potentis patris et filii et spiritus sancti, descendat super vos et mani et semper.
Amen. Father Sebastian Walsh has been our guest. He is a priest of the Norbertine Abbey just north of us. Thank you so much, Father, for this very fine conversation.
Thank you, Si. God bless you.
Coming up next, Carlo Broussard is in here, and we're going to talk about how you get saved. What's the Bible blueprint for salvation? It actually is kind of an important question. It's good. I think we'll get Carlo in here for an hour to talk about it. If you want to get in line to talk with Carlo about salvation, 888-318-7884 is the number.